You're listening to All Marine Radio on the All Warrior Radio Network.
I'm friends with the monster that's under my bed. Get along with the voices inside of my head. You're trying to save me, stop holding your breath. And you think I'm crazy, yeah, you think I'm crazy.
I wanted to fame, but not the cover of news.
Hey, very good Tuesday morning to you. Mike McMarion for a Tuesday edition of All Marine Radio, right here on the All Warrior Radio Network. Hope you're having a good morning. Big stuff going on in the world today. Yeah. After 25 years of work on a nuclear weapon and on the verge of having it, North Korea has had a change of heart. They want to talk. All right. But I want you to listen to some audio here from Ambassador, is it John Bolton? I think it's John Bolton. He's negotiated nuclear. He was ambassador to the UN, I believe under Bush. He's negotiated with relative to the Iranians and the Iraqis. I want you to listen to what he has to say. Bill Hemmer interviewed him a little bit ago on Fox.
John Bolton, former U.S. Ambassador to the U.N. How you doing, sir, and good day to you.
Glad to be with you.
So what to believe and what not to believe once you heard these headlines?
Look, the only thing North Korea is serious about is getting deliverable nuclear weapons, and by all accounts, they are very close to achieving an objective they've been after for 25 years. So why do they want to talk now? To divert our attention, to get us enmeshed yet again in negotiations, to get across that finish line. Look, we've talked to North Korea on and off, directly and indirectly, for 25 years. We have failed, obviously, to stop the program. There's no reason to think with them a few yards away from the finish line in year 26, they're suddenly going to get serious. Indeed, I come to the opposite conclusion.
So you, not only are you skeptic, but you don't believe this to be true. This appears to be true. They would not even be...
Okay, that's not... what he just articulated, that's not skeptical, okay? That's like completely blowing it out of the water.
...in this position without James Mattis and Rex Tillerson and Donald Trump. Would you agree with that?
Well, I think they have gotten to the point where they're worried that this administration doesn't respond the way the Obama administration did for the last 8 years. But I think they see in South Korea an opportunity to try and drive a wedge between us and South Korea, or at least force us into these negotiations. And the real problem is not talking. If the administration continued to increase pressure on North Korea, that'd be one thing. But I will bet you a dollar, just as we're sitting here today, you're going to hear almost immediately the United States has to contribute to the atmosphere. We've got to show good faith. Let's prime the pump. All of which is code talk for make concessions. And if that comes, then I think you can count on this. North Korea will get deliverable nuclear weapons before the end of this year.
At the end of 2018. Maybe the economic squeeze is working. Maybe they're starting to feel that. I mean, possibly that's why you have a change in potential tone.
I don't think so. Do you think Iran is abiding by the sanctions on North Korea? I don't think so. I don't think the Russians are. I think the North Koreans are the world's best grifters. For example, do you know who paid for their participation in the Winter Olympics? South Korea. Great deal.
Yeah. You think that leadership's getting taken here in Seoul?
The leader has been very
liberal and open towards some sort of dialogue with North Korea.
This is the sunshine policy crowd all over again. They're like putty in North Korea's hands. It's very emotional for South Koreans. I understand it. But, as the great international relations theorist P.T. Barnum once said, there's a sucker born every minute.
Mm. We think about inspections here, right? I mean, to take this, to the next point in the argument.
How funny is that? The great international relations. That is so funny. Oh, my God. He's awesome.
If you were to get a freeze in the nuclear program, we're not going to believe anything that happens in there unless you get people on the ground to verify it. And that takes you back to Iraq and that shell game that happened for years. with the UN. North Korea is the most closed country on this planet today, Mr. Ambassador. How's that going to work?
Well, it won't work. The only inspections, even theoretically, the only international inspection system in North Korea that you could have any prospect of actually finding out what they're up to would have to be so intrusive, so large, so pervasive across the country that it would threaten the stability of the dictatorship itself. That's one reason among many why it will never happen. Mm. This is a temporary device by the North Koreans to do what negotiation has done for them for 25 years, buy time to make progress on their nuclear program. They may not need to have any more nuclear tests. That's what the freeze proposal may mean. Now they may just be manufacturing nuclear devices.
Last point on this. If you believe they're nuclear by the end of 2018, that would be something else. Who makes the next move in this game?
Well, I don't think we should let them get to that point. And that prediction is based in part on what CIA Director Mike Pompeo has been saying, that they are within a handful of months, his phrase, a handful of months of being able to hit targets in the United States. I think if they get nuclear weapons, they're a threat in East Asia. But we've also seen the future just the past week of the sales to Syria by North Korea of equipment and precursor chemicals necessary for chemical weapons. Let me just say it graphically. North Korea is selling the materials for weapons of mass destruction to Syria now, chemical weapons, and they will do the same with their nuclear technology once they have it.
Sir, thank you for your time. John Bolton's there in Washington.
You,
all right, so on that cheery note, we can go ahead and start the program. Grant Newsham's going to join us, and it was Grant yesterday that made essentially the same prediction. He was not brilliant enough to use the phrase, the P.T. Barnum phrase, a sucker is born every minute, but he said it would be more gesticulating. And really an attempt to, you know, create daylight between the United States and South Korea. So there you have it. Anyway, on this Tuesday morning, the 6th day of March, good morning. Dedicated to the Prime Minister of South Korea. I hope listening to this, having it dedicated to you, will give you a little stiffness in your spine, the stiffness to look across the table and to call them out for what they are and be done with this in very short order. If he continues to walk down that path with you, you will be a diplomat of historic proportions. However, if it's a ruse, you need to find that out in the short term. April, right? 2 months away. And there's already 2 months for you. So, here's a little stiffener for you, Mr. Moon.
We are proud to play the title of the United States. And so, my fellow Americans, ask not what your country can do for you. Ask what you can do for your country.
My fellow Americans, I'm pleased to tell you today that I've signed legislation that will outlaw Russia forever. We begin bombing in 5 minutes.
Let me be clear. As hard as the last 16 years have been on our military, no enemy in the field has done more to harm the readiness of the U.S. military than the combined impact of the Budget Control Act's defense spending cuts, worsened by us operating in 9 of the last 10 years under continuing resolutions, wasting copious amounts of precious taxpayer dollars. If you don't get the resources, my closing words, then your strategy is nothing more than a hallucination, because without the resources, there's just so much brave young men and women can do.
What keeps you awake at night?
Nothing. I keep other people awake at night.
We just have to execute. And we are executing every day, and Sergeant Major and I are very proud of what you do. Doesn't mean we can't get better. We don't want to make a mistake to learn. We don't want to lose to learn. We cannot lose if we have to go fight. We got to do what these Marines did here 75 years ago. Persevere against difficult, challenging conditions and odds and win. You got to win.
It's a whole bunch of interesting news today. We'll go there right after we check Marine Land. And then Grant Newsham's going to join us in 16 minutes. We're going to just get his thoughts on breaking news today. And then after that, Major Chad Buckle will join us. And we're going to talk about a series of articles he's written in the Gazette. And that is about changing the way we train our infantry Marines, the composition of the squad, the whole career path. Yeah. Interesting stuff. All right. Currently cloudy and 38 in Quantico. It is cloudy and 50 at Camp Lejeune. Mostly sunny and 49 in Granbury, Texas. Clouds and a little bit warmer in Montana. Clouds and 31 in Montana. 29 Palms, about the same. Sunny and 46. Kemp Pendleton, clouds and 47. Okinawa, dark cloudy 67 with some storm warnings in effect there. Mars is warming up. Cloudy, dark, and 70 degrees. Haven't seen 70 at this time of the day for a while. I think they're either 9 or 11 hours ahead of us. At the home of Auburn Radio, partly cloudy, 49. On our way to 75 beautiful degrees today. 71 tomorrow. 70 on Thursday. So as long as we're in the 70s, we'll sort that out, okay? That 60 stuff, yeah, we don't go for that. All right, we'll check some news headlines right now. Marine Corps Times evidently in a slow news week. So when it's slow, what do we write about? Yeah, females and Marines United. All right, first story. Where are the female Marines? 2 years after combat billets were opened, women still aren't in them. Yes, they are. There's just not very many of them. Like, did anybody expect there'd be a lot of women that want to sign up to do those jobs? Now, that's the concerning thought right there. Here's a story written by Sean Snow. He's the new Jeff Scogel of Marine Corps Times. All right. 2 years after the Defense Department ordered the Marine Corps to open all combat arms career fields to women, less than 100 have successfully entered those previously male-only jobs. A total of 92 women are operating in a multitude of combat billets across the Corps, from riflemen to armored reconnaissance to combat engineers. Yet only 11 enlisted women are serving today in the traditional O3 infantry career fields, Marine Corps officials say. No women have attempted the basic reconnaissance course or amphibious reconnaissance course, and there are no female snipers, according to data provided by Manpower and Reserve Affairs. Of the women serving in combat billets, most of them are in less physically demanding roles, such as light air defense and artillery, commonly referred to as non-load-bearing job fields. On the officer side, only one female officer has graduated the grueling yet watered-down infantry officer course and is serving currently as an 0302 platoon commander. A total of 23 female officers are serving in previously restricted combat jobs. Marine spokesman Brian T. Block, quote, "There's no target number or quota for how many female Marines should be in ground combat units or fields. The focus is on combat effectiveness. We are systemically executing the Marine Corps Force Integration Plan." Okay, so now there's not enough of them. Many advocates for female service members say the Marine Corps numbers paint a disappointing picture of gender integration process across the Corps. Yet, it's still a historic achievement that 92 individual women are now in combat arms MOSs in the Marine Corps. Then it gives a breakdown of, it's a pretty lengthy article. Contrasted with the Army has nearly 500 women serving in various combat billets throughout the Army, officials said. Moreover, 10 women have graduated from the Army's grueling Ranger course, and one is serving as an officer with a Ranger regiment. See, that's the key. And what billet is she serving in? Okay. 74 women have graduated from infantry or armored leaders basic course. Needed more women. The Commandant of the Marine Corps, General Robert Nellis, said in January he wanted to grow the number of women in the entire Marine Corps to 10%, up from today's 8% female force. That would likely boost the number of women in combat armed, but it's a lofty goal. Yeah. And then it goes on to talk about the ranks of women, throughput through Paris Island, yada, yada, yada. So check it out. Interesting little read. And I would just say this. The day that comes that there's quotas for women in the Marine Corps will be a sorry-ass day. Okay? Again, I think the Marine Corps has done it the right way. And that is, you can't throw the gates open because these are the people that locate close with and kill people at close distances. So you can't lower standards to hit targets. What you have to do, and quite rightly do, is what the Marine Corps, I think, has done, and that is take a look at your standards, make sure that your training events are reflective of your standards. Make sure those standards are linked to reality, things they have to do, which the Marine Corps never had before. And then don't come off those. And the numbers go where they go. But again, you have various agendas, and so that's what is reflective, I believe, in most of the reporting, is, yeah, we're disappointed in the Marine Corps. That what? There's only one woman serving in a Ranger battalion, in a Ranger regiment, no less. They didn't even say a battalion. So what is she doing there? Is she serving in an infantry MOS, or is she serving in some other MOS? The article doesn't say that. So after all the blah, blah, blah about who got through school, who's serving in those actual MOSs? One in the Army, which is what, 2.5 times the size of the Marine Corps? Therefore, the Marine Corps would be ahead of the Army by about 50% based on those percentages. Other stories. Interesting story. Pentagon operations against ISIS in eastern Syria have been paused. U.S.-backed ground operations against the Islamic State remnants in eastern Syria have been put on hold because Kurds, who have spearheaded combat against the extremists, have shifted to a separate fight with Turkish forces, according to U.S. DOD officials. So that's kind of interesting. There's that big dust-up when we killed a bunch of Russians. Yes. And guess what? In that immigration court that everybody was crying Chicken Little about, guess what happened? Oh, the right things are happening. All right, early bird, top five. Grant Newsham joins us in 7 minutes. Pentagon operation against ISIS in eastern Syria paused. Okay, we've already covered that. Leaked ISIS propaganda video allegedly shows the U.S. The death of U.S. troops in the Niger ambush, that investigation coming out, bits of it leaking out. From Task and Purpose, the Pentagon says everyone who watches or just mentions a disturbing video is helping the Islamic State. Top five. Number one, where are the female Marines? Two, stealth features responsible for half of the F-35 defects. You heard, we talked about briefly yesterday, the F-35 in early batches, right around 50% or less, are combat ready. And the majority of those effects, according to the program manager, have to do with stealth devices that were manufactured early. The Maritime Self-Defense Force in Japan intends to buy a tanker to replenish the U.S. Navy's White Beach facility in Okinawa. So it's the first such purchase in, I want to say, a few decades for the Japanese. So they continue to cast, we spoke about it a little bit yesterday, but on the East China Sea, where they think that they will bump heads with the Chinese in the not-too-distant future, they begin to do logistics for it. So, interesting stuff there. Immigration court clears the wife of a U.S. Army Special Forces soldier to stay in the United States. Well, there's a shocker. And the Army has acknowledged in the fifth story in the early bird that it has mishandled war dogs and will comply with the call for reform. Stars and Stripes, fastly becoming my favorite. Now, like in neither one of those in the early bird, the Korean story isn't even mentioned. Top of the fold story in Stars and Stripes. USS Lexington, first aircraft carrier sunk in World War II, found near Australia. North Korea agrees to summit with South Korea, possible freeze of nuclear tests. Come on, you read that, it's like, okay, whose fantasy is that? Whose fantasy is that? Because come on. That ain't happening. Are you kidding me? So if that easy, they just had to meet and talk, and now he's going to disarm? Yeah. I love, but that's a classic line, though. In the immortal words of P.T. Barnum, a sucker's born every minute. Do you believe in that? I've got some swampland in Florida I want to sell you. Stars and Stripes. The USS Lexington, the first aircraft carrier sunk in World War II, was found off the coast of Australia. Yeah, and I believe that expedition led by Microsoft guy Paul Allen. The Lexington was critically damaged by the Japanese. On May 8, 1942, in the Battle of the Coral Sea, and the Navy was forced to scuttle it. The ship's wreck was located Sunday by the research vessel Petrel, which is owned by billionaire explorer Paul Allen. The wreck rested about 500 miles off the eastern coast of Australia and about 2 miles below the water surface. Holy smokes, two miles, that's a long, long, long way. Images released by researchers show a wreck with stunning intact features, including 5-inch guns with the rifling still visible inside the barrel. The ship's name remains visible on several areas, and an intact fighter plane still emblazoned with U.S. stars. How cool is that? The Lady Lex, as she was known. The Lexington's 2,700 crew members were shuttled to other nearby ships in the U.S. fleet. The United States also lost the USS Sims, the USS Neosho in the battle, with the USS Yorktown sustaining heavy damage. The Japanese lost one light carrier, the Shoho, and one of its fleet carriers was heavily damaged. The Battle of the Coral Sea marked a new era in Navy warfare, where battles would often be fought between carrier-launched aircraft and ships never seeing each other or coming within sight. And then along the Battle of the Coral Sea, along with the Battle of the Midway that happens about a month later in 1942, ends Japan's ambitions in the Pacific. The Battle of Midway. Yeah, the Battle of Midway. Yeah, somebody just sent me a text. 2 miles below the surface. Yeah, that's a long way down there. Yeah, you can thank Microsoft. So those of you that have bought a Microsoft product, it all comes home. All right. Now, this wasn't scheduled. Hey, and just here's a program advertisement. This little thing I'm doing, battle studies. Holy smokes, man! What do you hear? The one from Nick War. Nick War is a platoon commander for Charlie 15 at Hawaii City. He loses essentially 30 of the 50 Marines in his platoon conducting 3 frontal attacks across a street in 15's first combat in Hawaii. Okay. And when you see the maps and you listen to the story, holy smokes, man. The series is awesome. If you missed last week with Chris Bronzy, it's awesome. And then, you know, and then with Nick, you have to live with that. 3 separate times, you know, the battalion ordered frontal attacks. And just a quick teaser, they're getting enfilade fire down the street they're trying to cross. They can't get across it. He loses 30 guys that day. So, yeah, Nick Ward, you'll hear that tomorrow. All right, now, with all that said, time for us to bring in our Skype guy. So Skype, always an adventure, but it was good yesterday. So stand by for the goofy music, and we'll get Grant Newsham on here, and we'll get his thoughts on Korea. John Bolton. I love that John Bolton stuff. A sucker's born every minute. The sanctions must be paying off.
Speaker?
Newsham, McNamara, good evening.
Hi there, good evening. Yeah.
Mm-hmm. How are things in Taiwan, Taipei?
Well, they're still as they were 18 hours ago.
All right, no change. That's good. All right, mm-hmm. which story are you more excited about, the USS Lexington being found off the coast of Australia, or North Korea and South Korea are going to have a summit in April?
The former. Yeah, that's just me. But, you know, I once brushed elbows with Paul Allen. The guy who found the ship.
How'd you brush elbows with him?
I was at the embassy in Tokyo in about 1995-ish. He owned the Portland Trailblazers then, and they were giving some, held a couple games in Tokyo. So I actually got tickets to those, but I also got invited to a reception the night before with him. And why I remember it is because he had a guy, he had like, it's like a manservant. next to him, who, when you met him, that guy would give you Paul Allen's card. He is the guy who, like, carried the cards, the way that general officers have, like, manservants who with a bag of coins. Was that sort of thing. But I think finding the Lexington's pretty neat.
The and the pictures are incredibly clear at approximately 2 miles below the water line. So wow. The all right. So give us your take on this. What is North Korea doing? I heard John Bolton talk a little while ago on Fox. It was actually pretty comical. He quoted P.T. Barnum. He said, in the immortal words of the great diplomat P.T. Barnum, a sucker's born every minute. North Korea, his point is, North Korea has worked on getting nuclear weapons for going on 26 years, and now at the 11th hour in the 58th minute, they've decided they'll give it all up.
Yeah, I think John Bolton's probably right. It just may take a while to play out, but I think he's right. You keep in mind that North has asked for is, it's kind of what they said is, well, if we have nothing to fear, and if we get some security guarantees, then we'll give up our nuclear weapons. But they've been saying that forever. There have actually been deals that have been cut with North Korea by the United States that effectively give security guarantees, and these go back to 1992, 94, 2005, and then there was the so-called leap year agreement that the Obama administration tried. And North Korea violated it like the next day. So this is nothing new. So there's precedent to suggest that this has been tried and it hasn't worked. Where you might find a distinction is that this is the first time this Kim has done it. It's always been other Kims. I would submit, though, that none of this would have happened, that the North would not have even offered this were it not for the pressure that the Trump administration has put on North Korea, which, while it hasn't been as thoroughgoing or as tough as I would like it, it is more than anyone has done to date, period. So that has gotten Kim's attention, at least. And so he's at least, I think, playing this game, whereas I don't think he would have done it were it not for what Mr. Trump has done. So I think the Trump administration may talk, but I don't think they will be inclined to sort of get strung along for very long. And the way this usually works is the North Koreans, they demand things like food, oil, some money, and they always get it, and they always have. And I don't think the Trump administration is going to do that. So if they're willing to hold some sort of lower level talks about talks, I think that is probably what they will do. It's probably safe enough to do that as long as they keep up the pressure, right, on North Korea. If they back down, or that it's just, you know where it's going to end, and I think John Bolton is probably right about that. And then the last thing I'd note is that one of the things to consider is that if you were a neighbor of China, suppose you were North Korea, you didn't like the Chinese all that much, and vice versa, would you give up nuclear weapons? I think that may be part of the equation here, something to consider, that while we do consider North Korea getting the nuclear weapons to use against the South or to intimidate the South and thus to split the U.S.-South Korea relationship, now, it could just be that the North Koreans want those nuclear weapons to keep the Chinese at bay, particularly now that Emperor Xi is taken over. So that's just some ideas that come to mind when I heard the news.
All right. So if we look into our crystal ball, they sit down and in April, and what comes away from that is, we want food, we need oil, we need all of that now to hold this next round of talks. The United States says no. Then what? No more talks?
Well, I think the U.S. won't do it, but I think there's a, obviously South Korea's involvement here complicates things, because I think Moon is likely to get suckered, and I think he will be willing to give the North Koreans gifts, and I think that's not going to make the Americans happy, but there's limits to what the Americans can do. So I think that, there are several moving parts. And Moon's behavior is very much up in the air, though I think we can kind of predict what it's going to be like.
Okay, could you explain to everybody Moon's background with the sunshine? What do they call it, the sunshine movement, or what do they call it?
Moon, although he was a Korean Marine, he is from effectively a faction in the South Korean political world that is considered, if not pro-North Korea, at least is very much has a sense that it's possible to cut a deal with North Korea that really, everybody's Koreans, and if they can just get down, sit down and talk and sort of show the North that there's nothing to worry about, that there's benefits to be had if they behave nicely, that they can work things out. And there is a sense in this faction that it's the Americans who are their problem, the American unwillingness to just see the North's perspective and to give them what they want. And so Moon is of that faction. He's not, I mean, there's actually what you would call worse guys in it, but he is, you'd have to put him, he's either naive or an appeaser. I think he's probably some of each. But say so that's what he represents. And it's not necessarily a majority of the South Korean population, because I think he won with a plurality, not with a majority. But so that's what you have. And he's like the third president they've had from this faction. So it's, they seem to switch back and forth between what you'd almost call conservatives or harder liners and these sort of Korean Neville Chamberlain types, who in the past have just paid huge amounts of money to North Korea, and it's really led to nothing. But it's sometimes one of the administrations like this, it was called the Sunshine Policy, the idea of this new era, new age with North Korea. So Moon is, so he's not a complete appeaser, but he's naive at least. And this, so he wants to work something out with North Korea. He thinks you can, but he's also smart enough to realize that he can't just tell the Americans to get lost. So he's trying to have his cake and eat it too. And that, well, I've always liked to think that is possible. In my own life, I must admit that laws of physics suggest it can't be done.
The North Koreans, as they look at their march towards nuclear weapons, they're in the 11th hour on their clock. They'll, in order to diffuse the tightening that the United States is applying economically to them, drive a wedge between the United States and its ally, South Korea, by leveraging Moon's sunshine, his sunny nature, therefore buying time, and till they, in theory, get across the finish line.
That's what I'd be inclined to think, certainly yeah. Based on a quarter century of experience. That's how I would look at it. One notes that, you know, while the North hasn't, you know, laid out exactly what they're going to offer, what they'll do, that they did suggest that they would stop testing and say nuclear tests and shooting off missiles. But that doesn't mean they're going to stop developing both of these. You know, there are things you can do even without testing. So that is something to keep in mind, because there is a lot of breathless commentary in some of the media over Kim's apparent climb down or concessions. But really, you have to give it some time, see how it plays out. And if it's different than everything that has come to pass before, I'll be the first one to admit I was wrong. But precedent and experience suggest that there would be a lot of back and forth and that sort of thing, but we may not end up very different than where we are today, except that the North has maybe shaken down South Korea for some goodies and also kept their program going and have moved it forward, perhaps not quite as fast as they would have if they could have done some real tests, but I don't think it's going to stop things. But the Trump administration, I think, does have to at least talk about, at least has to pursue this or explore it. But as long as, and so as long as they don't make any silly concessions, I think that's okay to do. And they may not have all that much choice, really, partly because they can't appear too intransigent on this, but they do need to stick to their position, to my way of thinking.
All right, so the due diligence relative to the talks has to happen. The sanctions all stay in place. We should expect that. And then we should in short order, there should be something hopefully in the April negotiations that is somewhat of a litmus test to see if he is willing to negotiate. And one of the other things Bolton said was, you know, they may be past in terms of maybe they don't need to test anymore. He said, you know, historically, one of the things that you've seen throughout history is somebody will give something up when they could either, one, no longer sustain it, or they no longer need it. And then they're willing certainly to give it up. He said, all you need to do is look to the east and watch how the Russians behave. When you see these kind of changes with these kind of gangster nations, they don't do it for no reason. They're very Machiavellian. And, you know, unless he slipped and hit his head and all of a sudden he's going to become a pacifist and give the South and the United States something that they've wanted since the end of the Korean War, which is not likely, then what you're looking at is nonsense. And so that kind of made sense to me. Maybe they're in a phase that they've proven the technology that they need, and they could either negotiate it to whatever number of times a year or one or two a year or whatever. I'm not exactly sure, but does that make any sense to you? Does that resonate?
Oh, yeah, I think that's it's plausible. I think it would be prudent to, I think, operate on that assumption if for the Trump administration. I think that would be, I think, good advice. You know, one can debate whether or not they've, you know, are as advanced as they want to be or need to be.
Right.
But that said, you know, I think what the nature of the North Korean regime and the Kims, I think John Bolton has described that well. And that's the thing to keep in mind, I think, is what we know of human nature and of this regime in particular. Because it isn't as though he suddenly one day woken up and said, no, I have been unreasonable. Let's see how we can work something out. You know, there's not a shred of evidence to suggest that is what any of the Kims have ever thought. I think maybe there's with one possible exception of Kim number two, but even that would be stretching things a little bit. But I think that is the right approach. And I'm, once again, I'm skeptical. You know, I see the April meeting between Kim and Moon, if that takes place, I would see it as the North sort of egging on or sort of bamboozling the South and putting the Americans in a difficult spot. But from the North Korean perspective, anything that causes friction or differences between the South and the Americans is a good thing. So I think that's probably what's going to be. I think that the North will offer to the South things that get the South excited but seem a lot less attractive to us. You know, it really promises that, well, if you give us this, then we'll do that. And the South will jump at it, at least Moon's administration will. But the Americans will not. And once you get that difference of approach, it's not a good thing from a U.S. South Korean perspective, at least from our perspective. But also the South Koreans, as I understand it, they are going to short order go visit Washington D.C. and I think they're also coming going to stop by Japan and talk to the Japanese about what's going on, and probably the Chinese as well. So you know, we'll see how it plays out. But they, once again, the breathless talk in the media, you know, I wouldn't buy that. But also, I would like to see somebody in the media actually mention that maybe Mr. Trump has had something to do with at least the North being willing to do what they're doing, create the sort of the illusion of a concession. You know, once again, one never knows. But I am skeptical. But I do think the Trump administration's approach, which is unprecedented for the U.S. side, has had some effect on North Korean thinking, because the sanctions and just this constant pressure has hurt the regime. I know it's, while it doesn't take a whole lot for the regime to survive, because it's not a very big place, and you know, when you're willing to, you know, starve two-thirds of your population, you can get along without very much. It nonetheless has caused, if you can interrupt things even a bit,
right,
it has a sort of an outsized effect on the North. So I think they have felt some pressure, actually.
The I want to ask you about Emperor Xi before I let you go. I neglected to do that yesterday. I had a thought about North Korea. The bottom line, though, is if it's not the, it's not South, well, I guess if you could budge South Korea to give you aid in the face of American sanctions, you've essentially negated American sanctions. So I guess that will be the thing to watch here, is if they can successfully do that. And if they've done that, then they obviously take the steam out of the sanctions that have been ramped up. But I think the South Koreans are doing the right thing in terms of their little shuttle diplomacy between Washington and Tokyo, and if they do go to Beijing, I think they're doing the right thing. So we'll see. I guess film at 11. Yes, we'll see what happens.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think we'll see.
We'll see if a sucker is born every minute. Emperor Xi, what do you make of that?
Oh, he has, he's just another dictator. Unfortunately, he's a dictator with a lot of power in a country that's got a lot of economic clout, and it's got a military that I can't think of a dictator before him that's had as sort of useful a military as he's got. We've, of course, built it up with the Europeans have helped, but the Americans deserve the bulk of the credit, I think, for this. So this is not a good development at all. You know, if he was, say, the dictator of Mongolia, I don't think I'd care that much. But China is a formidable adversary or enemy. They would tell you that we're their enemy, but so we might as well get around to doing the same thing. But this is really not surprising, and this was all predictable when Xi came to power, and when he, you know, first came on the scene, that this was going to happen. Nobody would admit it, but it wasn't hard to foresee. One has to consider the nature of the regime from which he comes. And the Chinese Communist Party has always been this kind of regime, just completely unwilling to give up power, to allow any sort of individual liberty. And it has got a very powerful sort of a capability for repression, for controlling its people. But as I noted, but also its ability to exert economic influence overseas and its military power. Having the biggest, say, regular navy, the biggest coast guard, the biggest maritime militia, in terms of numbers of any country on earth. You know, they have really ramped up quickly. I think this is the fastest military buildup probably of any country in history. And he's got all this stuff, and he's, he's in the driver's seat for now, unless something interrupts it. And
yeah, I guess that's my question, Grant. Once the Chinese Communist Party allows that, how do you take that back?
Oh, if he stumbles, you know, say their economy really does, if not collapse, really have some huge problems. Say the Americans really just become unyielding and apply serious economic pressure on China simply by saying we're going to hold China to a reciprocal standard and you can only do in America what we can do in China, period. If we say some real economic pressure, and once again, if we start building ships like we used to, building up militarily and not backing down, if you put Xi in a position where he has to either shoot or back down, and he backs down, or if he shoots and it, you know, really causes all the problems we expect it would cause,
right,
then you're going to find that all these people that he's hurt are going to come and get him, because he's made a ton of enemies but with what he's done, and it looks like he's on a roll now. But if once again, if things stumble, then he's going to get the blame, and he's in a lot of trouble at that point. But it's up to us to not keep sort of conceding. And because the Chinese are not very good, and Xi's crowd in particular, is not very good when things don't go according to plan. So as long as everything happens in the sequence they expect, which is really everybody rolling over for them, it works pretty well. But once it doesn't, once there's a stumble, it really is going to cause them some problems, and we should be working to do that if we're smart, not sort of rolling over in awe of Xi and what he's accomplished. But this is just another dictatorship that we've seen plenty of. This is just a scarier one than we're used to my way of thinking. But once again, just remember the regime out of which he came. And it's no different now than it was, say, in 1949. It's the same sort of regime. And it's really a clique that is insistent on holding on to power, squeezing as much out of the country as they can. And that's what it is. And now we've gotten what we've deserved. And now let's see what we can do to try and right things.
Well, sir, first of all, I want to thank you for hopping on at the last minute. And
sure.
I certainly appreciate it. Enjoy your time in Taipei. And we will talk to you down the road.
Okay, sounds good.
All right, thank you, Grant. You bet.
Right. Mm-hmm. Okay.
That is Grant Newsham. Looking into his crystal ball here this morning. We'll take a quick break. When we come back, Chad Buckle's going to talk about changing the infantry world. Right? Here's a teaser. One of the things he wants to do is he wants infantry Marines to train for a year before they come to an operating unit. A year. He wants them to come to the unit in a full-up round capacity, that they don't come as novices, they come as well-trained Marines, well-trained infantry Marines, adept at their field craft, and professionals, not as amateurs that have had rudimentary training. So interesting, and you'll hear how he thinks that's possible. So, don't touch that dial. More of All Marine Radio coming up next. Always interesting to have Grant on. And again, appeasing and what every nation that deals with China deals with the economic blackmail that they give them. Here, we'd love to create a partnership and cultural exchanges and open up our vast market to your companies. Okay. That is called setting the hook. And then here's what we want. We're going to want technology from you, and we're going to want you to manufacture in China once we get the hook set deep. And if you won't do that, or if you balk at that, then what we'll do is we'll say, sorry, then you can't do business in China. Now, for politicians, that's not going to, that dog doesn't hunt, right? I'm going to put these people out of work. My economy's going to suffer that blow. That ain't good. So you can see economic blackmail, and then, again, a regional power. When you see Chinese troops in Syria or in Pakistan or in Iran, then you've entered a different phase of what China is. But their problem, even relative to their navy, is where are they going to project power to? The United States? Into the Med? Right? Are they going to threaten India? So interesting to see what China will become. And it should scare the shit out of everybody. That a dictatorship, right, that a dictatorship is going to be rivaling the United States as a preeminent power on the planet. That is not good, sports fans. All right, time for a break. We'll come back. Chad Buckle, hopefully we'll be there. More of Allmarine Radio coming up next.